Welcome back to this episode of the Knowledge Base Podcast. I'm Kate, your host, and I'm back today with part two of our Monte Carlo episode with eMoney's Matt Rogers. On our part one episode, Matt and I talked a bit about good and bad Monte Carlo scores, as well as how the system defines a success and a failure. Lots of great stuff, but there's still more good to come. So here's part two of Monte Carlo with Matt Rogers. Please be advised that this podcast contains purely educational information and nothing discussed may be construed as legal, tax, or financial advice. Please consult a financial advisor for any financial investment or money management questions. All views or opinions represented in this podcast are solely the opinion of the speaker and do not represent those of eMoney Advisor LLC or any of its affiliates. It's very interesting to see how many different ways they can take things within the application. One of the things that we talk a lot about here at eMoney is the Decision Center. We spend a lot of time detailing Decision Center. We've talked about it on the podcast, but also in a ton of our other help resources. We know advisors spend a lot of time in Decision Center. So obviously with Monte Carlo in Decision Center, I want to dive into this a little bit more. What are the three different Monte Carlo displays in Decision Center? And can you tell listeners a bit about each of these?
Yeah, sure. So one of them is the standard sort of, I think we call it the summary page, right? The summary page where you get your overall score. And that's your overall score. And then we also give you sort of a, you know, what would your ending portfolio assets be if you got lucky? And so again, think about 1,000 trials, right? The 80 percentile trial is the pretty darn lucky, but not crazy lucky. Like 95% trial is the crazy lucky. Let's not think about that one. That's just crazy. That's like getting lucky. But 80% is getting like reasonably lucky. 50% is the median. And that's right about where your average was. Again, going back to my 5-5-5, right? There's lots of ways to make 5%. Things fluctuate, but at the end of the day, you make 5%. And then you have the 20 percentile, which is like, you know, okay, unlucky, but not crazy unlucky. Again, 5% would be crazy unlucky. Let's not worry about that. That's if that happens, we all have different issues entirely in our lives. So we give you the overall score, you know, 80%, whatever it is, and we just give you three stats, you know, the what you end up, you know, your investment portfolio, what it ends up being if you're lucky, 80%, if you're average, the median, and if you're a bit unlucky, 20%. We don't report on like the whole crazy good and crazy bad, but they're out there. So that's the one report. And then the next report is the asset spread, which is the same thing, right? It's just the visualization over time of, I'll call it, if you can picture a cone, right? You know, we have today's net worth, and over time, what are you worth next year? When anyone's going to say, well, if I've got $1 million, next year I could be worth 1.1 or 900,000 based on how the market does. But if you say, well, what about 15 years from now? Oh my gosh, I could be worth 3 million if I get lucky, or it can be worth, you know, horribly lucky, you might only still be at $1 million or something like that. So the cone expands over time. So our asset spread is that cone that says, hey, if you consistently get lucky, and again, 80% is our definition of lucky, not crazy lucky. 80% is the top of the cone. This is if you happen to get that lucky every year, here's where you'll be. And 20% is the, okay, you got reasonably unlucky, but you did it every single year. And that's where you'll be. Of course, what's more likely? Somewhere in the middle. And so there's a median line in that asset spread, you know, cone. And that's where the median is. And most likely you'll end up somewhere around that number mathematically. But again, you never know. If you happen to take one big bet on the wrong company, you're going to be on the bottom of that chart or below it even, you know, below 20 percentile. If you haven't made the right bet and bought NVIDIA, you know, 10 years ago, you may be well above that. But that's the cone of sort of general expectations. That's called the asset spread. And then the third one I think you're referring to is Monte Carlo longevity, which is, as everyone knows naturally in their own head, the longer you live, the riskier your financial plan becomes. Right? The old-fashioned classic, what's the client's first question? will I run out of money? And one of the first answers is, well, the longer you live, the more chances you'll have of running out of money. And so the longer you live, odds are, unless you're very fortunate, you're going to eat down your money over time. And as you eat down your money over time, if you run a new Monte Carlo score, you know, pretending you're age 90 from some reduced amount of money, it might not be a very good score. So Monte Carlo scores will go down over time for the typical person. Obviously, we have the people who are very wealthy and it won't happen. But for the average person, the longer you live, your Monte Carlo score goes down. And so we have a nice report that kind of shows you how your Monte Carlo score is projected to be. Obviously, you're not 90 years old yet. We're not doing a 90-year-old score. But we're saying, based on today's net worth and today's assumptions, we think at age 90, your Monte Carlo score might be 62%, even though it's 85% right now. And so we show that decline of the confidence of your plan over time, and it will decline. And the speed of that decline is actually quite important to the advisors. Obviously, you want a client who, ideally, the decline will be slow and steady versus, you know, I hit 85 and the decline of my score went down quickly. That's more dangerous, right? So it's a great report to look at just how sensitive a client might be to living to age 86, 88, 90, 93. How fast does their Monte Carlo score go down, projected score go down over that time? And better yet would be if I saw a very slow decline, that's great. But anyway, that's the third report. It's the longevity report, which is a very useful report to see how sensitive your clients might be to what's called longevity risk in the industry. Living too long can sometimes be a dangerous thing.
It's a double-edged sword, really, because, you know, who doesn't want to live long? You, of course, always want to hear that you know, you're expected to live for however long you can. But I think that it's, yeah, then it maybe invokes a little bit of fear in, okay, will I potentially run out of money? Seeing that score go down, I think for some clients could maybe speak a little bit of fear into their system. But
every survey I've seen, the number one client fear is outliving their money. And no one outlives their money at age 71. You worry about outliving your money at age 91 or 96. And so, yeah, it's the number one fear. And this is a report that would help give insight to both the client and the advisor into how sensitive a client might be to that chance of, like, wow, and good for you. I'm healthy as heck and I'm doing great. But what does that mean to your finances? It's an important question.
Exactly. And also, realistically, there are maybe some health expenses as you get older, some maybe unexpected expenses. Who knows what that could look like? But people are living longer nowadays, which is a wonderful thing, but it is definitely a factor in financial planning. So the Monte Carlo report encompasses just truly a ton of data. How does this report and its sub-report really give the advisor and the client clear insight into the trajectory of the client's plan?
Not to go back to my prior answer, but I would say the Monte Carlo score as it is a point in time score. So I'm 65 years old now, or whatever I am, 60, 65. This is my score right now. There's no, like, there's no great insight into a trajectory, right? So but there's two things, right, that you should worry about. What's my past trajectory? And so that would mean involving, what was my Monte Carlo score 10 years ago? Has my score been increasing over those years or decreasing? And so that's a great way to look at the relationship between, you know, you and your advisor, the partnership, you and your advisor. Are we moving the Monte Carlo score up over time or down? Hopefully not. Hopefully it's up. And so number one is the past trajectory can be done by just comparing my Monte Carlo score from 8 years ago, 7 years ago, 5 years ago. And then, you know, obviously, too, your score could be totally better or totally worse because just the markets had a great five-year run or a terrible five-year run, not your advisor's fault. So just, you have to sort of factor that in, but just be aware that it's not just a matter of, like, you know, markets matter, mm-hmm. and advisors can't control that necessarily. So there's the past trajectory. Are we moving in the right direction given that the markets have done well? Or Are we moving in the right direction, even given the markets have done not so well, whatever it may be? Mm-hmm. Are we at least, you know, holding serve, so to speak, or gaining? And then there's the projections as well, right? And that's going back to what I just said with the longevity, you know, score. Okay, great. Right now I'm 65 years old. My score is 80 because I have $1.3 million right now. I have an 80% score. Maybe I was 70 8 years ago. I've done a great job. Now I'm 80, no, 80 score. Let's watch my longevity Monte Carlo scores and see how fast they deteriorate or how fast they don't deteriorate. So we're back to the longevity risk report, right? To help that give us an idea about how might the trajectory, albeit is projected, correct? Going backwards is factual. Going forward is projected. Our projected trajectory might be very quickly declining or very not quickly declining. Or going up, possibly, in a rare case. That's kind of how I would use Monte Carlo for that. And as far as, like, past scores, worst case scenario is you have your presentations from 2010 or 12 or 15. You pull them out and you look at the scores. But also, we eMoney will hopefully, I think, soon be capturing scores periodically. So it'll be even easier to compare the trajectory of the past. We're not quite there right now, but that I think that's coming soon.
Okay, so that you bring up a great point in that answer, and it leads perfectly into my next question for you. Let's say you have a great score, you know, at when you're 70 years old, and then you get to 80 and your score is completely changed, or maybe, you know, 50 versus 70. Is there a recommended best practice as to how often an advisor should be going back to Monte Carlo to see if the outlook has changed for their client, maybe based on a change in updates to the client's data?
Yeah, I would say it's kind of like the same advice, in my opinion. It's the same advice as watching your stocks, right? You don't watch your stocks every day. People get too upset and too it's too quick. Every day is different. And even every week is too quick. I would, my opinion is that if you did it quarterly, that's fine. I would argue that might be borderline too quickly. Obviously, markets change, right? But markets usually change over a little bit of time. They don't just drop overnight. I know it's happened and whatnot. But so I would say 3 months is probably the fastest I would start collecting Monte Carlo data. My opinion is probably 6 months is a nice number right there. That's enough time where if something happens over a 3 month span, okay, great. It's been 3 months and we see a clear trend. The markets are doing terribly. But yet also, I haven't waited so long that I can't respond to it. If you wait 5 years after the market had a problem, waiting 5 years is crazy, right? But waiting 2 months longer, okay, we can still solve this problem by taking action about, hey, Mrs. Smith, maybe we have to spend a bit less, at least to start, you know, your retirement, and then maybe we'll figure it out from there. I think 3 months is okay. I think probably 6 months is a sweet spot, and certainly a year is fine as well. It just means that if, you know, the market correction happens in month two and three and four, you're waiting 5 months or 6 months to react to it. I don't think it's a big deal, personally, but that's more of an advisor call. But I think somewhere in that 6 to 12 month range is a great way to constantly sort of watch your score. I don't know if 3 months is that critical, but not bad. But anything faster than that, there's no point in checking a score every week. That's just too granular.
They're gonna drive themselves crazy if that's the case.
Yes, exactly.
We talk a lot about really building strong advisor-client relationships here at eMoney. It's one of the things that we focus on a lot in terms of the podcast, but also just in our discussions here as teams at eMoney. How does this feature within the application really help to support that mission?
Monte Carlo is a very mathematical, you know, process, but it is funny how, it, despite being mathematical, it actually promotes teamwork, right? As we discuss a few of these things, right? What's a good score? What's a bad score? That's as an advisor client talk it out. And by talking it out, we kind of learn about each other. Maybe the advisor is more aggressive and thinks the 60% score is totally fine. Yeah, because you can always change things. But the client is like, oh no, I'm more conservative. I wanna make sure I have more bases covered, even though they're unlikely bases. I wanna see 90%. It creates some nice conversations about your perspective on what's a good score, which is another way of saying, what's your perspective on, do you want to try to solve all your problems now or half your problems now and then see what happens over the next 10 years? Because some of those problems might never even be relevant. Why are you trying to solve them right now? It's a great way to open up some conversations about risk and control of emotions and those kinds of things. And then conversely, as your score moves on over time, for better or for worse, how you sort of think about that. Just because your score goes down when you're being retired doesn't mean you're doing a bad job. It just means that you are naturally taking money out of your family coffers. Yeah, so it does create a bunch of interesting dialogues because it's so non-binary, right? The old way, 5-5-5-5-5, you make it. Okay, or you don't make it. Okay, there's not a whole lot of like, how do you feel about that? There's a lot more, we're at 75%. How do you feel about that? Well, let's discuss it. And then the advisor has a chance to discuss like what Monte Carlo is and what it isn't, and how 75 isn't what you thought it was when you're a fourth grade kid with a math score. So you do get to learn a lot about your clients by discussing this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's great because you're right. It is such a mathematical component of the application, but it really does make it's a component that's mathematical, but still can really enhance that advisor-client relationship, gives them an opportunity for increased communication, something to really dive into together. And it's just unique in that sense.
So yeah, and I agree with that, and I go back to your very first question, right? Which as I think is I think every advisor needs to be able to have I won't say elevator pitch, let's just say a 1 or 2 minute description of what Monte Carlo is, because their clients won't know, right? And some won't care, that's fine, but some do care. But as soon as you get into describing what I did with you earlier, rates of return and variance. As soon as you use the word variance or deviation, you've entered a dangerous world. If you can explain the Monte Carlo idea in human language, like I did, we're not going to assume 5-5-5-5-5. We're going to assume randomized numbers that will end up being, around 5 usually. Sometimes kind of far, but less often. If you can just do that, that's mm-hmm. a huge win for any advisor to be able to explain Monte Carlo in a 2 minute human language pitch, not mention the words covariance or correlation matrix or rates of return. Like stay away from all that stuff, but definitely have your 90-second description of what Monte Carlo does versus the old way where it's like, we're going to assume you're going to make 5% every year, and then we're going to give you one answer. Yes, you made it, or no, you didn't. No, we're going to give you a range of answers. Like, here's lucky, here's unlucky, and here's the middle of that area. And so I think that's critical to the whole partnership thing, is having that 90-second description of Monte Carlo.
You're so right. I think that kind of hits the nail on the head, and it's a great marketing opportunity too, for them to really give their clients understanding of what it is that they use to dive into that data and analytics and show the numbers. Cause some clients are really interested in seeing that data and in seeing how they got there in the numbers. So I think it's great if they can really thoroughly and adequately explain that to their clients. What is one thing that you want advisors to leave today's podcast episode knowing about Monte Carlo in e-money?
Wow. In e-money, I would say that we started using Monte Carlo back in 05 or 03, a long time ago. We were early proponents of it. We were early users of Monte Carlo. We continually seek to add to the ability. So while maybe years ago all we had was a score, and then we added an asset spread, so you would see that range of expectation of wealth over time. We now have the longevity report, which gives us the confidence age metric. We didn't discuss that, but it's a different metric that we offer. We're always innovating on Monte Carlo, and so I think, and we have some more ideas that you'll see very soon. So I think as far as e-money goes, we continually push the boundaries of the Monte Carlo mathematics to give you more and more ways to communicate with your client. Not just, here's a score, 81%. We're going to be giving you more and more ways to interact with the client using the Monte Carlo data set, 1,000 trials and all that, all those, you know, each one with unique returns. We keep on innovating in that area. So that would be the e-money angle that I would just, you know, this podcast listener, I hope they keep watching eMoney, and I think you'll see more and more innovative Monte Carlo ideas coming from us.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're always cooking up something good here at eMoney, especially when it comes to Monte Carlo Decision Center, and there's just always so many great things unfolding. So I'm excited for advisors to be able to continue seeing things develop within the application, because truly it's just endless as to what they can do for their clients with any money. Where's one way that maybe Monte Carlo analysis can be misunderstood or lack clarity for advisors or for clients?
Well, number one, the score. We discussed that already, right? 75 might be far better than you think it is, right? So that's one area. And also just understanding that there's 1,000 trials. We do 1,000. Somebody else might do 500 or whatever, but there's X number of trials. We do 1,000. And let's say 600 pass and 400 don't. 60%. But what if a whole bunch of those failed trials just barely failed, right? There's no, in that score, there's no indication of like, oh wow, 200 of those 400 failed trials were very close calls. That should make you feel better, because then really maybe you're only, maybe then 20% is your downside. You have a 20% bad luck score, because really those trials that were darn close to making it, you could easily fix those trials, right, by a change in behavior. So there's not a whole lot of insight into whether you have a very very small successful trial that just made it over the line with $100,000 left over, versus a failed trial where you had $100,000 shortfall when you died at age 95 in the simulation. Well, those two trials is a $200,000 difference 30 years from now, maybe. That's an incredibly small difference. So just being aware of, this is not unique to us. This is the whole entire industry. Just be aware that there's failures that matter, and there's failures that are like, wow, that's barely even a failure. That's pretty darn good. So one of the things we're trying to do in the future is expose that difference. You know, nothing imminent, but we, again, going back to innovation, we want to do more with Monte Carlo, because we recognize that it's very binary, in that a $1 trial that succeeds by $1 is a success, the same way as a trial that has $40 million left over. That might be worth exposing in a report, like $40 million left over versus $1 left over. They're both successes in terms of your score. So we want to look more into doing things like that. So just be aware as a user that your score is fine, but also how many failures were really close. It'd be interesting to see, you know, if you had that data, and we're looking into doing some things in that area.
That's great. Agreed. I think that data would just help clear up so much. But really, I mean, Matt, we covered so much ground today. I feel like we really gave listeners, maybe both who are not as familiar with Monte Carlo any money, and listeners who are really familiar with Monte Carlo and just kind of looking to have a better understanding of how it fits into that comprehensive planning for their clients. I feel like we are leaving advisors today with a really great understanding of that. Just some more information on about how this operates with e-money, what they can do with it for their clients. And that is the whole goal, is really to help advisors elevate their business with these different features within the application. So thank you so much for helping us cover that ground today.
You're welcome. I love it.
That's a wrap on another episode of eMoney's Knowledge Base podcast and on my conversation with Matt Rogers. To tune into more episodes just like this one, head to the help menu in eMoney and click on Knowledge Base podcast. You'll then be able to subscribe so when we release new episodes, they'll automatically show up right in your podcast app on your phone. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on another episode soon.